And we're back. I'm Scott, your host on Sharing the Burden. And we're live here with Lloyd and with Sheldon. And we're talking about inventory. And by the way, folks, we're looking seriously at setting up a meeting in Stouffville, a regular meeting, that is, so that people can not only listen to us share as we come online or on the radio every Tuesday morning at 10, but so we can also share with some of the people the value of sharing, or the essence of sharing, and how powerful that can be in changing lives by sharing our experiences. And, you know, we're talking about inventory today. How did we get here? Well, if we don't know how we got here or where we're at, we're probably not going to move ahead in any sort of comfortable direction, because we won't really know where we're going or what we're doing. So that's why we do an inventory. And we're talking about the different things an inventory can demonstrate to us in our lives. And I have a simple sheet in front of me that's called Moral Inventory. And believe it or not, it has the number September 1944 on it. And it has another number, AA New York, April 1939. This is when the 12 steps really got going. And somebody, even at that time, had decided, well, there are certain things in life that are somewhat common, whether that's to, you know, where we're at or how we got there. But they came up with some of these words. I'm just going to repeat them to you and give an idea how an inventory might work. And we have, you know, either in our minds or written down, written's a lot better. We have two sides to a sheet. We'll say the left has the word liabilities on it, and the right has the word assets. So a left then would be the things that we've got to find out, and on the right side would be the things that would point us or help us overcome those liabilities. First one on the list is the word resentment, which, by the way, folks, is the greatest cause of relapse, we're told. So, and when we say relapse, it doesn't necessarily mean a cocaine, heroin, fentanyl, pot, or booze, or whatever. Relapse can be into a behavior, into a way of living, into a way of life, and usually the way of life and so on, and everything behind that falls right in line with you know, exactly where we're at and where we have to work on things. So anyway, resentment, to overcome resentment, we must forgive. And so the asset is forgiveness. And I find in the morning, if I get up and just look at the words on this sheet and look across at the asset or the strive for side, I can see right then, you know, where I'm falling down and what I have to do. So all I have to see is the word, you know, Jane, Mary, Harry, Joe, whoever is, you know, giving me a hard time in life at this time, and I'm thinking not so positively about, and I look on the other side and say forgiveness, and it just changes my outlook, because I know if I stay in that resentful mood, you know, I'm going to become the guy I don't want to become, like real fast, you know, like a heartbeat. So resentment, greatest cause of relapse. Forgiveness is the offsetting. Forgiveness may mean also the person you're feeling really bad about, you probably need to pray for this person and want the best for them, you know. And if you don't pray, just to want and to do something positive for that, even you know, gets rid of the resentment even faster. Next one is false pride. And pride, false pride, by the way, folks, can be feeling better than, or it can also be the opposite, feeling less than someone else or other people. And the way around either of them is humility. Be humble. Now, if humility is looked at the right way, when you feel like you're less than somebody, you're challenging, you know, the very creator of you and of Earth and of, you know, whatever else, depending on your beliefs. And if you believe in nothing, I'm sorry, but what does nothing mean to you? You got to believe in something. You know? So even that, I mean, humble to me means respect for the highest power that I can come up with, and in my life, that's God. So, you know, if I respect God and believe He knows everything and knows everything that's going to happen, did happen, will happen, and all that, He knows what I'm going through, and He knows at the end of the day that I could only do what I was designed to do, and of course I did it. So I can go to sleep knowing that even if it's some bad stuff, that somehow that bad stuff fits into the whole scheme of things. And I had to leave the inventory part there alone for a minute. And Sheldon, you were blinded I believe probably as a result of some addiction or some use of substances. Maybe you tell us a bit about that, because you've got a hurdle there that you've, and I think, I don't even see it as a hurdle, to be honest. Talk about it a bit.
So, in 2000, I was in jail for 9 months, and that's when I started realizing that my right eye was blurry, and I went to an eye doctor, and the doctor leaned back in his chair, and he said to me that, you know, you're going blind. And he said to me, like, how old are you? And at that time, I was 23 years old. I'm 42 now. And he said to me that I have glaucoma, but he said I'm too young to have glaucoma. So he said it must be hereditary. So he told me to call my mom, and I called my mom, and my mom said that she has it and my dad has it as well. So I went back and I told the doctor that, yeah, both of my parents have glaucoma, and he said that pretty much is why I have it. And he gave me 3 eye drops to take, Cosap, Alpha Gampi, and Travitan. It keeps the pressure down in the eye. And he told me when I get out, I have to go see my family doctor and then go see a glaucoma specialist. So my family doctor sent me to a glaucoma specialist in Toronto, and they did an emergency surgery because my eye pressure in my right eye was actually at 55, and the eye pressure needs to be at 12 or 11. So did the surgery. Then after, the doctor, who's not religious, told me to take these 3 eye drops religiously. he said, walk with these eye drops. They're going to keep you, it's going to keep the pressure down, and it's going to keep your eyesight. I said to him, no problem. But at that time, when I got out of jail, I went back into my active addiction. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was, as the weeks and months and years were going by, the doctor I would go for my checkup, and he would say to me, like, you know, why is the eye pressure at 50? Like, aren't you taking the drops? And I didn't want to tell the eye doctor that I was in active addiction. Mm-hmm. So I told him, I am taking a drop. So because he thought that the glaucoma was progressing and the drops weren't working, mm-hmm. he wanted to do more surgeries. But I didn't tell him that I was using drugs and alcohol, because he gave me a sheet of things that you can't take if you have glaucoma, because it raises the pressure. Like, I can't take Buckley's, I can't take Advil because it raises the pressure in the eye. I can't even take certain nasal sprays because it raises the pressure in the eye. So clearly my DOC literally tripled the pressure in my eye with the alcohol on top of it. So in 2011, when I actually woke up blind, so my drug addiction contributed to me losing my eyesight a lot faster. Like, if I had actually listened to the doctor and take the eye drops, I probably would have lost my eyesight maybe in like my 70s or 80s. Wow. You know what I mean? So when I went back to the doctor, bawling my eyes out because I'm blind now, mm-hmm. he leaned back in his chair and he said to me, like, I don't understand why you let yourself go blind. Because when he checked behind my eye, mm-hmm. he said that all of the optic nerves were damaged. Like, there's no more nerves that connect to the brain. Like, I guess the nerves from the eye are not connected to the brain anymore. Oh. And he said to me, you damage all your nerves. And he said to me, please tell me, like, what were you doing? Clearly, you're not taking the drops. And then I had to tell him that I was a drug addict, and he said to me, there it is, you pretty much let yourself go blind. Wow. And after that, I didn't even stop, I continued.
Well, I guess you had a rough time with the whole thing, but, you know, being an addict and then losing your sight, I mean, what a time to think about not doing something to escape reality, you know, because reality was you couldn't see anymore, and here you are with an addiction, and at least it's a temporary way to, you know, to kind of move out. So it makes it doubly hard to get a handle on the addiction, wouldn't it?
The thing is, I don't understand, Scott, why I love the program so much, because the program shows me that I was powerless over my addiction. I wasn't an idiot. Yeah. Because the thing is, I don't understand why, you know, I would let myself go blind. And, you know, the doctor warned me, and I didn't take the drops.
Wow. So I guess you held yourself responsible in a lot of ways too, didn't you, after that? And that's another thing with this program of ours. At some point, you know, forgiveness, we just talked about that, and resentment. I mean, here's you, in essence, resenting yourself for, the doctor says letting yourself go blind. There's a little more into it than that. I mean, you didn't plan to go blind any more than you planned to be an addict when you were a kid or something. But, you know, the drugs and the booze and everything combined had you feeling you were doing the right thing at the right time, and you ended up blind, you know?
Yeah.
And,
it sounds different with me, with my story. It sounds like the exact opposite.
Yeah. Well, tell us a bit about you. That's a good way.
Yeah. When I remember when I was in the hotel room and I was using, I actually thought about, am I using a lot? Will this hurt me? And so I was the opposite of Sheldon. I was more looking out for myself and more of a functioning user.
Mm-hmm.
And but I realized, this is what made me walk out the door. I realized that even though I was using a little bit, and I was careful, I was slowly poisoning my body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the realization, or that's what the inventory I took, that, it's eventually going to catch up to me. And that helped me walk out. It's almost like mm-hmm. listening to my own self, like listening to
reason.
And I didn't want to die, and at that point I lost 25 friends. 25 of my friends had already succumbed to the addiction. I didn't want to die, and since I left, since I got clean, nine more of my friends have passed on from active addiction. So it was a good inventory that I took, and that's what Sue was saying last week or 2 weeks ago, was that most people don't just take the inventory of themselves and just walk out.
I think you were, for whatever reason, it was your time, and you walked. And I bet if you think back to, I don't know how many people were with you then, but of those that you are actually sitting at the table, are those people still around by chance, or
they're all dead?
They've all
succumbed to the addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, the will for me to move forward was, I don't know why, mm-hmm. and I ask myself that too, and people ask me mm-hmm. that too. You know, you've got $400 worth of drugs on the table, you've got $300 worth of booze, and to just get up and walk out the door.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just finish it first? And I don't know. It's just,
and to not go back, what are you, 17 months or so now?
I was 17 months yesterday.
Okay, there you go. I'm pretty good guesser.
And I'm coming up to 16 months.
Yeah, 17 months.
That's
yesterday.
Fantastic, gentlemen. You know, and it's... It really is amazing, and folks out there, every story is different, and everyone needs to share their stories, and it's stories that save lives, and it's secrets that kill people. So I mean, as much as it hurts, and as much as you hear a guy like Sheldon here, who's a great big man too, what are you, 6'4" mm-hmm. or 5"
yeah,
or something
four,
like
yeah,
that, you
yeah.
know, and you know, he's a great big fella, and you hear him talking about sexual abuse as a kid and all that, and like he said on the break, you know, this stuff's very embarrassing, but he knows that by overcoming these things and still being alive, he has something to tell someone who doesn't have that extra ingredient, whatever it was that allowed Sheldon to get past that. This other kid may not have it, and that kid's not going to survive unless he hears how Sheldon did, you know? And that's the way these programs work. And we were talking in the car, you know, about, differences in the sense of spirituality and so on that always comes up in these programs, by the way, folks. And Sheldon asked me a question, and my answer was that I think, our God, our creator, our higher power, whatever you want to call it out there, folks, for me, it's the God of Scripture, the God of the Bible, but that's not that it needs to be that for you. But whatever you believe, you know, you've got to get a handle on how to communicate with what you believe and get your strength in someone and so on to do something, you know. And I don't know, I know with Lloyd, the way it it came, it's miraculous the way he walked from, because that is rare, you know, and the 17 months in, you know, and you know, God willing, he'll never touch the stuff again. but generally speaking, you know, to just see it so clearly, and then after to go back and do, you know, more serious inventories of your life, and to see all the things that you were basically, you know, I don't know how to call it, but a successful, a middle class earner with a pension looming and living on the street so you can afford your drug habit. I mean, that's pretty pretty heavy, you know. And I guess when you get to, like, now, you look back, you know, what fool we mortals be, and, you know, and I lead the pack kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough. Anyway, gentlemen, hold your thoughts. We're going to take another break. Maybe we'll get a song. Maybe Jay's found something. He always looks for something appropriate to what we're talking about. So what do you got for us, Jay?
Oh, for sure, Scott. Here's a good song from Paul Brandt. I know he's an artist that puts out some pretty inspirational music, and this one is called The Journey. We'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.
Storm clouds building and rolling round. I can feel the thunder as it shakes the ground. Momentary complication. Static on the radio station. Steady on now, gonna keep my course. Tell my heart that it ain't looking back no more. No time for desperation. Set my destination, please. No one ever promised it would be easy. Come on, why don't we go on the journey? Leave the doubt and worry, horizon far as I see. Come on, baby, ready, set, one, two, three. Oh, there it is, just beyond the sunset. Place that we ain't been, you won't ever get to be unless we go on the journey. Traveling is half the fun, but I'm in it to win it, gotta get it done.